Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 111 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host, as always. Today, I have a fabulous guest, Travis Hornsby. And Travis is the head of something called the Student Loan Planner. He likes to refer to himself as the Chief Student Loan Consultant. And what you're going to hear is how he started off as a bond trader on Wall Street, and then through a series of, you know, self-discovery, found that he was able to provide some consultation and some insight in how to manage one's student loan debt. And as the student loan crisis became more and more substantial, Travis was able to then create this company and provide consultation services to a great many attorneys in particular on how to either reduce their debt or make their payments more manageable or apply for forgiveness grants and that kind of thing, really to provide an overall strategic approach to addressing one's student debt. And given the fact that so many of our attorney friends and colleagues are just laboring under the yoke of large loan debt, this is a really important and really valuable service that Travis provides through his company. And I think you'll enjoy listening to him talk about how you can make a difference going forward. So without any further delay, here is Travis Hornsby. Travis Hornsby, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Yeah, great to be here, Neil.
I'm so glad you had the time to be with us today. Travis, tell our audience a little bit about who you are and how you came to be where you are today.
Sure. I started off, graduated, went straight into bond trading. So I became a bond trader for Vanguard, a really large investment company.
No pressure there, huh?
Yeah, exactly. So it was kind of crazy because I remember one of my first trades they let me do was for like $1 million. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, that's such a huge amount of money. And then eventually I started putting in orders for, you know, $10 million,
right,
you know, $100 million deals just because, you know, Vanguard's got so much money to invest. And it was a great learning experience. I got a ton of Excel skills, became really kind of fluent in, you know, programming different things. And then I met my now wife, who had a bunch of med school debt. And I thought, well, this will be pretty easy to figure out. Let's just put it in a spreadsheet and figure out, you know, what kind of payments we can afford to make, and we'll find out when we'll be done with it. But then I found out there's all these complicated programs, right? There's different income-based programs. There's, you know, this public service loan forgiveness. There's refinancing opportunities with a whole bunch of different banks that market to you. And I realized it was a little bit more complicated than I thought it was. And I had been planning for a time to take some time off, and I did that, and then decided, well, you know, I've been helping her and helping some of her friends figure out their student loans with my spreadsheet. Maybe I should share it and say that I do it kind of as a part-time gig. And I shared the spreadsheet that I built, and it went viral and got downloaded thousands of times, and people were asking me all kinds of questions about it. And I thought, wow, this is a big need. So that's when I started Student Loan Planner in October of 2016. And since we started it then, we've advised over $250 million in student loans. So I joke with my wife, that's almost like real money.
Almost, yeah. That's almost like bond trader money.
Yeah.
Just to diverge a moment here, we like to give people the opportunity to toot their own horn, but more importantly, to toot the horn of their spouse or family members. From our emails, I know you just got back from an adventure helping your wife. Can just, you know, share that with our audience a little bit, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure. So my wife's really passionate about global health. That's one of the primary reasons that she wants to be and stay in medicine. And so she does surgeries for women who have problems with their pelvises from childbirth. And so there's a lot of these problems, obviously, in developing countries. And so we went to Ethiopia for a couple weeks, and she did some surgeries and some work with the local doctors there to help teach them the latest techniques for reconstructing women's pelvises. So we were over in Africa for a couple weeks, and she did about 40 surgeries, and I just kind of hung out and supported her and did whatever I could to help. And it was really, really amazing.
God, I feel so unworthy as a human being.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty unworthy too, if it helps. You know, she's the one with the passion for this, and she's been two times by herself, and I felt like I needed to go with her this time. So, yeah, she's a very special person, that's for sure.
Well, back to the topic at hand. I'm glad, as I mentioned, to have you on the show, because this is the student loan crisis has been a pet peeve of mine since I graduated from law school, and I did so right at the start of the economic crisis that we had in this country that resulted in, among other things, a severe diminishing of available jobs in the legal market. But that didn't stop the law schools from pumping out ever more students with the idea that they were going to get a big paying job. And for most of them, they were carrying a huge amount of student debt. And in some cases, that drove them to make decisions that were counterproductive to a long-term legal career. What is the nature of the student loan crisis these days? Is it still a crisis? Is it still a problem? Has it got better? Has it got worse?
It's gotten much worse, Neil. So about 10 years ago, student debt was around $300 or $400 billion, and now it's standing at over $1.5 trillion. You think about that kind of an increase. In comparison, mortgage debt is about $8 trillion. So I think that student debt is probably going to be at the center of some major financial catastrophe at some point. But because all of the debt is with the government, I think it's going to be a very long time until that reckoning occurs. Think about it like Social Security or Medicare unfunded liabilities. You know, it's just going to require some major painful sacrifices down the road that we just aren't going to see for a long time. The thing with law schools is, you know better than I do, that, you know, law schools, I mean, the profit margins are fantastic for a university, right?
For the schools, yeah.
Yeah, for the schools, yeah. What are the expenses? You have faculty salaries and maybe some buildings, and, you know, that, I mean, maybe a couple library resources, but that's pretty much it. There's no, you know, multi-million-dollar medical facilities, or, you know, you don't have to buy cadavers, right, or something like that. So you've got these fantastic profit margins, and with the structure of the federal student loan system, the Grad Plus program allows for unlimited borrowing to cover the cost of attendance, and schools figured this out. So the schools, the only requirement that the schools have is that they have a certain percentage of their students not default on their loans within 3 years. So because of the generosity of these federal programs that exist for paying back student loans, virtually nobody is going to default that has a high level of education on their student loans within 3 years, but they're definitely not going to pay down their debt in a lot of cases. So these law schools have no responsibility on the side of making sure people are making good financial decisions. They have unlimited borrowing capacity and every incentive in the world to have more people that'll come because of the great profit margins. So it's really created quite a perfect storm.
And, you know, the irony is that if you think about a law school and the ancillary offices that support the student body, the two biggest ones are the placement service or office that tries to help you get a job, and the financial aid office that tries to help you, you know, pay for your education. And it was my experience, and I think just anecdotally from what I hear from others, the job placement office doesn't do nearly as good a job as helping you fill out the forms for financial aid. And what they don't really do in the financial aid office is help you evaluate the ramifications of the debt that you are assuming.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I studied in college was economics, and that just teaches you to think about what are people's incentives. So basically, if you think about a financial aid office, if they do a fantastic job at making sure that people that shouldn't go to law school don't go to law school, then they're probably going to be out of a job, right? Or at least they're certainly not going to be, rewarded with bonuses and promotions up the chain of the law school command. So the primary incentive of a financial aid officer financially is to get as many people in school paying as possible. And that does not coincide well with helping people make informed financial decisions.
Situations like this don't usually grow to catastrophic levels unless somebody along the line is reaping the benefit. I don't see that it's the student reaping the benefit. So who is getting the benefit of promoting this system that's not really working?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people will blame like the government. Like a common, you know, kind of feeling I hear from people is, you know, the government's making so much money off of this and the banks are making so much money off of this. But and that's in some cases true, but I actually think the primary beneficiaries are the schools themselves and universities in general. You know, if you look at the proliferation of various jobs, you know, especially in administrative ranks at universities and law schools and other professional programs, it's really, you know, quite great for them, right? And yeah. and the loan servicers, you know, there are some student loan servicers that are making a bunch of money. Navient, you know, Nelnet, Fed Loan Servicing, some of these bigger loan servicers, they're definitely doing well. But they're making billions, and I think the schools are, you know, basically making trillions if you include all the tuition that's not borrowed for. So I would put the primary beneficiaries, I guess, is the schools themselves. Maybe secondarily, you know, the banks and the loan servicing companies, and you know, the government actually. Every report that comes out, it'd be really kind of funny if it wasn't so sad, but you know, every like government accountability office report that comes out about loan forgiveness programs and the student loan federal portfolio, the projected losses always seem to grow. So they always thought that they were going to make a bunch of money on these programs. But what's happening is the people who are in the big law jobs, lucky enough to have those kind of jobs, they're not paying the government back their loans at 7%. They're refinancing and getting, you know, 4 or 5%. And so then the private banks are the ones benefiting from these people with good credit situations. And then the people who are stuck in the public service jobs, not making a lot of money, or they, you know, or maybe working at a small law firm and they can never pay back what they owe, and they're doing a loan forgiveness program over 20 to 25 years, those are the people that are keeping their loans in the federal portfolio. And so the people that modeled this never really fully accounted for all of this. And so the government's going to lose, I think, hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars on their involvement in the student loan sector long term.
That's ironic.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to inject my politics here, but it's hard not to see how the one percenters are the ones that get the benefit of the government program, and the ones who truly need it are the ones that are, you know, essentially hurt by it.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the design of the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, this is a program that allows you to work for 10 years in a not-for-profit or government you know, sector, and then your loans are forgiven tax-free at the end of it. And I always hear, you know, politicians talk about how we have to protect this program because we have to protect all of the firefighters and police officers and teachers out there that are, you know, serving our nation, and we can't cut this program back. But I always view that as a comical statement, because the primary beneficiaries of the program are, you know, very high income physicians, right, in a lot of cases, that are working at hospitals that just happen to have access to the loophole. And then, you know, and there are legitimate, you know, people out there doing public service as attorneys, and, you know, that happen to have a lot of debt. But, you know, the primary benefit is going to people that have the most debt from, you know, these private professional programs. It's not going to the firefighters and the police officers.
No.
So it would be much better, in my view, if the government acted more as an honest broker with these programs and trying to limit the cost of the school in the first place, rather than have all of these backdoor subsidy programs. But that's unfortunately not the world we live in.
No. And, you know, for most attorneys, when they graduate law school, you know, they know in the back of their mind, or sometimes in the forefront of their thinking, that I got this big student loan bubble hanging over my head. And usually their first real experience with what that means is when they start getting calls daily from Navient. You know, and we had an attorney on a couple of weeks ago who practiced consumer protection law and talked about what people can do in order to limit that. But, you know, I guess my question is Navient and other entities like that, are they good for solving the problem, or are they adding to it?
That's a good question. So the first thing I say is, if somebody's already at the point where Navient's calling them several times a day, and if it's a private student loan, then you really have to work with a, you know, a local person in your state that really understands the student loan sort of settlements and negotiation and bankruptcy laws in your state, because it's different state by state with talking to some of the people that specialize in student loan law. Because some states have very strong laws that you might be able to get a good settlement, and other states, you know, maybe like some of the southern states would have very poor laws, and you're basically not going to settle for anything. It's positive from the consumer perspective, but but if you look at it from kind of the front end, like let's pretend you've got an attorney who's got some private school debt or private debt with Navient, and they've got some federal student loans. Like most of the people today, most of their debt's going to be federal student debt.
Right.
They might not have too much private debt. The private debt, I always tell people, I tell my clients, that's the really troublesome part. If you can get your private debt paid off and headed in the right direction and knock that out, then you're going to be in a fantastic position financially, no matter how much federal debt you owe, because you can always limit your payments with the federal student loans to a percentage of your income, and you can always set it up where it's affordable for your monthly budget. The private student loans are the stuff that you have to pay back no matter what. And so that is a big obstacle in a lot of cases for people. And so you really want to focus on, you know, refinancing private student loans if you can, and get rid of that as quickly as possible so that, you know, it doesn't become a problem with, you know, Navient calling you multiple times a day. So I guess what I'd preach is more of like, try to do preventative medicine. And if you are in a position where they're calling you multiple times a day, you know, there are different options that you have. It just depends if they're private student loans or federal student loans.
Well, so we've kind of set the stage here for what the problem is and what the effect of the problem is on attorneys and how you came about to create your business here. So let's talk about, you know, how can attorneys and what type of attorneys would benefit from reaching out to you?
Sure. So my site's studentloanplanner.com. And what I tell people is if you obviously need to refinance, you can just go on our website and just click on these cashback bonus links and just shop around and just refinance. You don't need to pay us anything. Like, I'm all about charging for value. Like, can we provide a valuable service to you or not?
Right.
That's my focus. So for somebody who obviously needs to refinance, this person would be someone who their debt, their law school debt, is less than 1.5 times their current compensation.
Okay.
So if you're working at a big law spot and you know are making, you know, $180,000, maybe you owe $250,000, it's pretty clear what you need to do. You need to refinance. You need to pay back your debt as fast as possible if your plans are to stay in that big law world. Now, the value that we provide for a consulting service is answering the question like, do I refinance? Do I go for student loan forgiveness? How do I go for student loan forgiveness? How do I minimize my payments by saving for retirement accounts? How do I make sure that I'm putting enough money away for any tax consequences associated with loan forgiveness if I'm operating in the private sector and I'm going to owe, you know, income tax on my forgiven student loan balance in 20 years? How do I save for that? So those are the kinds of questions that it's worth working with us for the consulting service. And, you know, anybody who's curious about it can just send me an email. My email is travis@studentloanplanner.com. But that's basically what we do. So like, the site's designed with a bunch of free educational content, and most people that engage with us never pay us for anything, and that's fine. You know, I do this because I love it. A subset of people are going to say, though, that, hey, you know, I have $250,000 of law school debt. I'm making $70,000 practicing family law at a small firm, and I don't really know what I should be doing. Like, how do I, you know, keep my head above water financially? And for that kind of a person, I think we can transform their outlook from a kind of a very frustrated, you know, confused, helpless, anxious outlook to something that's actually quite positive, where they have a path forward.
Yeah, I think that's so valuable, because what you're really doing is providing strategic consultation, you know, giving them the big picture and a plan for how to address what they need to deal with. And I think so many attorneys, and by the way, well, I keep using the term attorneys here, but because that's the focus of this podcast, but ironically, we have a fair number of other professionals that listen to the podcast, doctors, chiropractors, dentists, because the issues are the same about running a business in those professions. So, but I'll still say with attorneys, I think most cases, attorneys, or in a lot of cases, attorneys, they're just frustrated and they don't know where to turn. And so they just keep paying the minimum payment as best they can. And sometimes they make it and sometimes they don't. And that's what triggers all kinds of issues. And so I think this, you know, strategic consultation is so, so valuable if you fall into that category.
The main problem that I see people have is they don't have any plan. And so when you have no plan or you have a plan that's suboptimal, you can cost yourself, because of the dollar figures we're talking about, tens of thousands of dollars. So I track about how much money we save people on a projected basis from correcting mistakes. And it's about $70,000, because our average balance that we advise on is about $280,000. I'll give you a couple examples of this, because I think that'd be very helpful for listeners to understand. So one classic case is if you're going for a loan forgiveness and your path is pretty much going to be that no matter how much money you make because of how much debt you got, you do want to pay as little as possible because you're going for loan forgiveness. So if you're making payments on loans that are going to eventually be forgiven, then all you're doing is getting a fractional value back on the dollars you're spending making prepayments. So one common mistake I'll see is somebody will have, that kind of case that I mentioned, like $250,000 in debt. Maybe they're making $60,000 to $80,000, not a ton of prospects for more money than that. And their payment's $300 a month, but they're paying $800 a month. Right. Well, if you continue paying $800 a month or even twice that, you're never going to pay down the principal balance in full over the 20 years until the loans are forgiven. So what you're doing is having a smaller loan balance at the point of forgiveness rather than paying off your loans. And in doing that, all you're really saving yourself is that 40% of that forgiven balance in taxes. So effectively, you're paying a dollar and getting 40 cents back in the future 20 years from now. And that's a very bad trade-off from a time value of money standpoint. So I see that mistake made. I also see people that are paying the loans back on like a 20-year or 25-year extended plan with the government, and they're paying at a 6-something% interest rate. They could be on something like the revised pay-as-you-earn plan, which gets them interest subsidies and cuts their effective interest rate, or they could be refinancing and actually maybe paying an extra $200 or $300 a month, but having a 10-year payment term instead of a 25-year. Because of the opportunity to slash their interest rate, and then there's also people that don't really understand public service loan forgiveness and don't even realize that they qualify and are not optimizing that. There's just so many mistakes that people make, and it's just a function of having an unfortunately very complicated system where if you know the rules, you can benefit a lot, and if you don't know the rules, you get hurt a lot.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight. Daylight is the Mac CRM and case management tool I've been using for years to manage my practice. If you're feeling swamped trying to keep track of cases and clients, but you don't want to pay the hefty price tag of something like Salesforce or other legal-specific tools, I recommend you give Daylight a look. Daylight helps me prioritize my day. It helps me keep track of my clients, cases, documents, emails, calendars, to-dos, and reminders, all in one place. The case management part of Daylight makes it really easy to organize all the details and work for each case so things are done on time. The best part of Daylight is that it lets you work offline. You don't need an internet connection to pull up case details or info about a client like with other CRMs and case management tools. And new in Daylight is their Zapier integration, so you can automate things like pulling new leads from a contact form on your website right into Daylight. And for techies like me, you know that integration with tools like Zapier is really fundamental to making something like Daylight work the way you want it to work. So to learn how Daylight can help you grow your practice, visit marketcircle.com/daylight. And be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first month subscription. That's Daylight by Market Circle. The legal environment is more competitive than ever, and small law firms are feeling the pinch. With over 1.3 million attorneys in the United States and counting, it can be hard to stand out from the crowd. And that's why Spotlight Branding helps lawyers become unforgettable. Spotlight Branding is a different kind of internet marketing company. They don't put their clients on the SEO hamster wheel, and they don't ask them to burn thousands of dollars on speculative pay-per-click advertising. Instead, they're focused on the fundamentals of legal marketing that have worked for dozens upon dozens of years. They use the internet to build a premium brand for solo and small firm lawyers like myself, and they put systems in place to create top-of-mind awareness, allowing their clients to maximize the referrals and repeat business. It's the smart way to grow your law firm. To get more information, visit spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur, and receive a special gift from our friends there at Spotlight Branding. And if you plan on attending the AVO Lawyernomics Conference in Las Vegas later this month, as I am planning to do so, stop by their booth, the Spotlight Branding booth. Mention our podcast, and you'll receive a special gift there as well. So thanks again to our friends at spotlightbranding.com for sponsoring this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. You know, it brings up the other question that I have, you know, in my mind, that if, you know, the law schools are generally benefiting from this process, it also seems to me that the bar associations, another pet peeve of mine, aren't really holding up their end of the bargain by failing to provide educational resources to their members about services such as yours. It seems to me that if I'm in the leadership position for a bar association, and I know that a fair number, if not a majority, of my members are, you know, under the thumb of crushing student debt, that a service that I could and I would suggest should provide is education about the resources such as you're talking about. It seems to me there's a partnership that could be developed between somebody like yourself and the Bar Association, which would benefit all involved. And so I'll hop off my soapbox there.
That's okay. I mean, that's flattering to think about. But I think that a lot of organizations in general are rightfully wary of any financial helpers, right? Because there's certainly plenty of folks out there that are, you know, not operating on a fiduciary standard or not necessarily looking out for the best interests of their clients. And so that, you know, vetting process can be time consuming and potentially troublesome to open yourself up to. So, you know, I guess maybe
But you would hope that attorneys could do a good job at vetting.
I guess you'd hope. I
mean, anyway, so what are some of the roadblocks that an attorney might have to taking advantage of a service like yours? I mean, I'm sure there are, you know, some real and some imagined reasons why attorneys think that maybe they can't benefit from a service like yours.
So there'd be, I guess, a couple reasons. I mean, one, it's not a free service, right? So you kind of have a value hump to get over. So for people who owe less than $300,000, I have them work with one of my associates, and that's a flat fee for an individual of $295 right now. And then for somebody who has more than $300,000 of debt, the issue is a little bit more complicated. The dollar figures are large. I want to make positive that no mistakes are made, and so I take on all of those cases personally, and that's $449 is the individual flat fee for that. And it's a one-time flat fee. You know, there is a non-zero cost associated with it. And I think that the other issue is that I think people, in some cases, I hear from people that have used services to help with their student loans and maybe have had bad experiences. So they're a little gun shy about that idea. Mm-hmm. And what I'd say with that is, you know, there's most of those services want to take over the income-based, you know, certification paperwork, and that's their value proposition. And you know, I don't really find any value in that. We don't do that, because what I think that encourages is having people check out and not consciously think about it, which is not what I want to happen. I want them to have a plan and actually empower them to act on that plan
and be engaged.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, if somebody does your paperwork for you, I mean, they're not giving you a plan, and then, you know, they're taking something over when you really should be thinking about it. So maybe that's a reason. And then maybe another reason is the idea that they can figure it out by themselves. And you know, in some cases that's true. It's, you know, attorneys are smart people, but I think that the main issue is, I've done close to 1,000 student loan consults And there's a very good chance that just by the virtue of spending that much time on it, that I will know something or find something about your loans that you will miss. And I think that the, you know, that requires a certain level of humility. I mean, think about any time you use somebody's professional services, right? Why go on online? You know, why not go online and get a will from, you know, one of those like automated website legal places versus going to an attorney and getting one, right? So I think there's a little bit of a kind of a value proposition. But, you know, I mean, I guess that the main thing is, you know, do you want to spend the time, probably dozens of hours, trying to make sure that you've got a good handle on it to make the decision yourself? And then, you know, would you rather be certain that you've got a really good plan instead of think that you do? And if that's worth, you know, a couple $100 to you, then I think it's a great thing to work with us.
To me, I think it's a no-brainer because, it, you know, it's one of the sore spots for attorneys. First off, we're talking about managing money, which we don't always do as well as we should. And as you said, it's an admission that maybe there's some aspect of this that somebody else is smarter in the room. And we oftentimes have a short-sighted view, like, why would I want to spend $300 or $500 when I can spend hours upon hours researching this myself?
Yeah. It depends on what your hourly rate is, right? Yeah,
I mean, exactly. If your hourly rate is $250, well, you're losing money if you spend more than 20 minutes on it, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny. And, you know, and it's kind of interesting, too, the gender breakdown of our clients is probably maybe like 60 to 65% women and then 35 to 40% men. So I don't know if kind of like the old adage, like men don't ask for directions. It's kind of, kind of true, you know, and it's really interesting, you know, 'cause a lot of times, like, I'll get contacts from men who kind of think that they've got it figured out and they kind of send me an email, almost want a little bit of free advice, you know, right. And they're like, oh, how's my plan? And I'm like, well, first off, you probably shouldn't be on that repayment plan. And you know, you're probably not maximizing all the available retirement accounts you've got, and you're probably not saving the right amount in the right way for your tax bomb, which is probably costing you thousands of dollars a year. But other than that, it looks great.
you're fine. And I note from your website, which, by the way, I think is fabulous. There's a lot of great information on there. And as you said, people can benefit just by going from the website alone. And we have that in the show notes, but it's, you know, studentplanner.com, pretty easy. It's also clear that you come across a lot of couples that are in the same boat together. Either they, you know, they're attorneys who got married, or, you know, they're law students who got married, or, you know, an attorney married a doctor and a doctor married a dentist and that kind of thing. So I think it's interesting that you also deal with the issue from the perspective of working as a couple.
Yeah. Yes. So actually, probably the majority of our clients are engaged or married.
Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, just I think it's probably that time of your life, right? Like 20.
Yeah. I suppose. Yep.
Yeah. Mid 20s to mid 30s. You know, most people in general start getting married around that time or engaged. But yeah, I mean, that's also, I think, when people are kind of willing to admit that it's more complicated than they want to figure out by themselves. Because what can happen in a lot of times is if you have a lot of debt. So let's say that you've got $200K in law school debt, and you've got, you know, a $60K a year job, and you're trying to go for the loan forgiveness program, but you marry somebody who has a high income.
Right.
Then you have to take into account their income and your calculation for what you have to pay. And you can file your taxes separately to exclude that, but then you have to pay higher taxes. And so then it gets very complicated where you're trying to figure out, do I file taxes separately and pay a $10,000 tax bill to exclude my spouse's income to get this loan forgiveness benefit? How exactly do I go about picking the right plan, given that my spouse also is making, you know, a certain amount of money, and I'm trying to figure that out? And it gets real complicated real quick. So that, yeah, we've seen, you know, the biggest debt that I've seen for a couple so far together has been about $1.6 million. Hmm. Just in student debt.
Just in student debt.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure you see all kinds of things that people are foregoing because of the oppressive nature of their student loan debt. And they're putting off buying a home, or they're putting off, you know, starting a family. There's all kinds of real world, you know, daily tangible negative effects of not addressing this issue.
Yeah, well, you know, I can attest to the things that people are not doing and the things that people should be doing. I've had some female professionals, especially like in the healthcare world that have said things like, you know, I really just decided I cannot bring any kids into the world because I've got so much debt, you know.
I've heard
that one a lot. One article that I've been meaning to write is the rise of spiritual marriage thanks to student loans. So it's not just a, you know, millennial fad or something to, you know, say that marriage, you know, isn't the most important thing to me. It's like people look at the requirement to include your spouse's income in the calculation for these payment programs. Yes. And what they've decided in some cases is, you know what, we can have a ceremony and just never turn in the certificate.
Right.
And so people are doing that. And there's a lot of people that are living as married people that are actually not legally married just because of the nature of having to include their spouse's incomes. And so I definitely see that. I've seen people discuss getting a strategic divorce over their student loans and, you know, still really be married, but just on paper, they got a divorce. And, you know, I've seen all kinds of really bizarre things. I've had people move to the Middle East to go make a bunch of money over a short period of time working for some sort of, you know, royal family member of some Middle Eastern family there. I've had people move to Australia to get away from the system entirely, and just they're making all their money under the table. Yeah, I mean, so all kinds of life-changing things. And in reality, I think that the real message, though, that I want to have for people is whatever decisions that you're planning on making in your life should actually be made independent of the student loans. And the reason I say that is because you can always make a strategy that matches whatever your goal is, what your plan for your life is. So I've got sometimes people tell me, you know what, I want to work part-time and kind of, you know, have more time with my kids. Well, you know, you can set up a strategy where you're doing a more of a loan forgiveness type approach, saving for a tax bomb over 20 or 25 years and minimizing your payments. And you know what, you can make that happen. You know, if you are working at a big law firm and you're burnt out and you've got all this debt and you feel like you have to pay it back, well, guess what? If your passion is, you know, public interest law, you can make it happen where you can switch jobs and go for the PSLF program. You know, if you want to pay off your debt, if that's really important to you, you know, you can live frugally, get a private sector job and refinance and get rid of it quickly. So, you know, whatever your goal is for your life, there's too many kind of ways and strategies and plans that you can craft to let the student loans affect it. So it's unfortunate that it's happening, but you know, you have the big numbers in front of you and in front of your eyeballs, and that just makes people panic and makes people risk averse and not wanting to take these big next steps.
Yeah, and to their detriment in many cases. Well, Travis, it's been delightful chatting with you. I think what you're doing and obviously what your wife is doing are really admirable. I wish you all the success in the world. Tell our audience how they can reach out to you if they want to follow up.
Sure. Yeah. So it's just studentloanplanner.com is the website. And you can click on the blog and there's a categories for lawyers at the bottom, on the bottom right. You can scroll down and click see all the articles I've ever written about law school debt. And you can also send me an email, travis@studentloanplanner.com. And I'll happily tell you whether or not, if you tell us a little bit about your situation, I'll tell you whether or not we think we can help.
Well, that's terrific. Well, again, Travis, thanks ever so much for being our guest on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks, Neil. Great to be here.
Once again, I'd like to thank our friends at Market Circle, the makers of Daylight and Spotlight Branding, for being sponsors of today's podcast. Market Circles, as the makers of Daylight, provide the tool that I use to manage my cases, my clients, my calendar, my to-dos, the emails, and they do so all in one app that stays with me on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. I use Daylight on my own in a solo environment, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases and delegate tasks to one another on your team, and you can see everyone's schedule all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools that I use to stay organized, and it increases my efficiency. And therefore, it only stands to reason that it'll do the same for you and your team if you use it in a broader environment. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur in order to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Also, our friends at Spotlight Branding, as always, have been very helpful in sponsoring this podcast. You know, I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to help keep me top of mind with my referral network. So visit www.spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur. So spotlightbranding.com/TLE to access your free gift. And as always, make sure that you visit our website, www.thelawentrepreneur.com, to see everything that's going on with the podcast and subscribe to our newsletter so that you can stay in the know and be the first on your block, so to speak, to gain insight into what's going on here. So once again, thanks for being here this time around. I appreciate your listenership. Hope to see you again next week on The Law Entrepreneur.